Hi everybody and welcome to Mindlessful. I know we haven't had a recording with a lovely person in a while, but today we have the amazing Breed O'Donoghue. And Breed O'Donoghue is the author of three fabulous books, Memories and Missions, The Mystery of the Sensitive Child, and The Psychic Code. She's from Clare and she's a healer, and I came across her last summer. I was in Doolin with my friend and I came across her fabulous book, The Mystery of the Sensitive Child. And I have shared it a few times on Instagram. I use it with some of the amazing kids I work with. I just think it's an absolute fabulous, fabulous resource. And recently I have also got her other book, The Psychic Code, and I use the tools in that myself. She's just amazing. And recently I seen she was giving a talk in Galway, and I went and I listened to her talk and it was so insightful. She really gave an insight in, you know, what being a sensitive child looks like and how to support the sensitive child. And I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast may resonate with being a sensitive child, or they may have a sensitive child. And it's so important to know that that's your gift. It's your gift in this world to be sensitive, but it's about having tools and having resources. And yes, Breed, you have lots of them. So thank you so, so much for agreeing to come onto the podcast.
So Kira, I'm absolutely delighted to be invited and very grateful. Thank you. It's so lovely to be on.
Oh, thank you. And I know you resonate yourself with being, you know, when you were younger, being a sensitive child.
Yes. So I think our, thankfully, society is moving along where, but not everybody, but people are beginning to open up to the fact that it's okay to be sensitive. But back in the day, for me, being sensitive was really not even considered. Often that word sensitive is derogatory or is used derogatory. It's almost like somebody who's weak or pathetic or not able for much, or, you know, you couldn't ask them they're sensitive, or, you know, as if it's a negative.
Yeah.
But the actual interpretation of sensitive is, according to our dictionaries, someone who senses other people's needs, problems, feelings, and our pain, and shows compassion for what that other person is going through. So this child is in the dictionary as somebody who senses what's going on in their environment. The dictionary does not say weak or frail or fragile or incapable. It says somebody who senses. And that is absolutely, when I talk about the sensitive child, somebody who has an extra strong awareness of their environment and the people that share that environment with them. And then it's coming to terms with that and learning how to understand it first, I suppose, for the child, to give them the understanding, the words, the vocabulary to explain it, and then give them the tools so that they can go forward and embrace it as part of themselves, and then learn to use it as a strength and a plus.
Yeah. Definitely.
But obviously, unfortunately, as the child, when I was that child many, many years ago, that wasn't the case. I'm also dyslexic. So back in the day, I went to a convent, and so daily it was daily slaps and daily beatings for getting my letters reversed and also sensing what was going on around me. So completely overwhelmed most of the time.
Yeah.
And then we get to 2024 and we get to all these fabulous parents that are listening to your channel. And all these fabulous professionals that are listening that want to understand these topics and want to know what it's about and want to help these children. And so for me, in order to get to the children, it's like we have to get to the adults first. We have to get to their understanding. We have to open their minds to the true meaning of these words, like sensitivity and empathic ability, so that they can then break it down into normal everyday language for the children so that they understand it.
Yeah. And to normalize it, I think that's happening a bit more. Would you resonate with that?
It's definitely becoming more and more of a topic.
Yeah.
A lot of us think of the sensitive child as the one that cries a lot.
Yes.
And that's possibly the one that people identify most as the sensitive child. But the sensitive child can present in many different ways. And that's really why I address it as the mystery of the sensitive child. Because different children who are highly sensitive will present differently. And within that, they will need different tools and different grounding techniques to help them to cope.
Yeah.
So I tend to break it down into 9 different groups. So the first group is the withdrawn child, the anxious child, the child who struggles to participate. And unfortunately, I've met a number of children, as I'm sure you all have, who are just so overwhelmed that even going in the school gate, like I've met a 5-year-old who's just physically is ready to be sick once he gets to the school gate.
Yeah.
So we have the withdrawn child, that anxious child, that one that just struggles so much in society. And I know when I think back to my teenage years and to my start-offs in life, like I loved socializing, I loved music, but
yeah.
I couldn't go onto the middle of the dance floor. Like it was just too much. The energy in there was just too much. And when we're listening to our music or there's something that we absolutely love, we're completely open.
Yeah.
And so I would be completely open to the energy around me in the middle of the dance floor. But in that setting with all the people that are taking alcohol or substances, I was completely bombarded by all that was going on. So I couldn't do it. So I would be hanging out near the fire exit or hanging out near the entrance. So if some gorgeous guy asked me to dance, I physically couldn't
Okay.
get
Yeah.
myself to go onto the dance
Yeah.
floor.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
then they'd ask my friends and they'd say yes.
Oh.
And I'd be left by the fire exit. So
Oh.
you have that person who is withdrawn and anxious and struggling to participate.
Yeah.
One group that people don't tend to think of as being the sensitive child are the kids who hit or kick or bite without apparent provocation. So I'm not saying all children who present with this type of behavior are doing so because they're sensitive, but some sensitive children, this is their natural reflex. It's almost like for anyone that's from a farm background, if they've ever touched off an electric fence, for somebody who's highly sensitive, if there's someone around them with strong emotion, it's just like that. It's like getting a push into their little tummies.
Yeah.
And in order to protect themselves, their hand is going out or they're pushing back or they're kicking or they're biting. And it's their natural reflex. And if that child is somebody who's highly sensitive, having just done that, they're going to be reprimanded and then they're going to sense the anger and the frustration of the person who's their caregiver, also cross with them, also disappointed, also angry and annoyed. And then their energy is coming in on the child, like in another electric fence. So for that child, who's often taken as the opposite of what we think of as the sensitive child, it's just one to consider that perhaps that is the reason that a child might be behaving the way they are.
Yeah. And I think that's so important because behavior is communication. Do you know there's
Yes.
something they cannot communicate? So I think that's a really, really important one, you know, for parents to even think about. Or, you know, I like the way you said about the electric fence. Do you know, that's a really good visual.
Thank you. And so for that child, if that is their response because they're sensitive, and then the person like their mammy, if it is, that's given out, or the person they care about most in the world is given out to them, it's so difficult because their response is to keep themselves safe and they'll be told, no, you can't do that. You can't keep yourself safe. So it's a very confusing space for a child that has no understanding of emotion and why their emotions are changing from moment to moment. The next group that I categorize are the ones that are often known as the attention seekers or the drama kid. So if one little child falls, say Katie, if Katie falls and Betsy starts crying, Betsy can get told off, you know, what's wrong with you? It's Katie that, you know, why are you looking for attention? And it's this child that needs the help. But Betsy, if she's sensitive, is feeling Katie's distress. And some people that are sensitive not only feel emotion, but they also feel physical pain. So if Katie's hurt her little knee, Betsy can be feeling that in her knee. Mm. So she has her distress at watching her little friend fall, and she has a copy of her little friend's pain. Mm. So if there are multiple kids around and one child is injured or is in distress, the sensitive child will also need attention. Obviously, the child that's caught or bleeding or whatever is going to be priority number one. But the other child is also going to have been traumatized by the event and will need help calming down and coming back in solid into their own energy. And so they will need little coping skills as well.
Yeah.
And again, they can be reprimanded or teased for being the drama queen.
Yeah, and it's so hard because in the world we live in, some we want that physical, you know, like if you have a cut, you can see the cut. But when they're taking
Yes.
on someone's energy and there's no cut, and you know, it's hard. I suppose it's even more important for parents to have this knowledge or this information, because then they can understand what's going on in that child's world.
So what's lovely when I get an opportunity like this to come on and talk to somebody as open-minded as yourself, it just gives the opportunity for this topic to be discussed and looked in at. The next group, I call them the wigglers. So they're the ones that literally cannot sit still. And it's like they're uncomfortable and they're trying to get away from something, or they're trying to shake it off or wiggle it off, and they just keep themselves moving constant. So with that little child, again, once they have an understanding of what's going on, and we'll talk after this about the different coping skills depending on the children. So that little child also needs help calming down, help coming back into their body, help settling back in. The next group are the talkers. So for me, these are the kids that they might be feeling uncomfortable. They might be picking up on somebody else's anxiety and think they have to fill the space to keep it safe or to distract from the emotion they're picking up on. Or often children that are highly sensitive cannot make sense of their day. They know their experience and the way they're behaving is different from their peers, and they can't make sense of it. So they can start happy suddenly. They might want to cry. Then they might get really frustrated. Then they might hit their best friend. And they have no clue or concept of how does this make sense. And so for them, sometimes they do what I call a download at nighttime, where they talk themselves back through the day and they go through every interaction and they try and talk it back in to make a logical sense of that day. And they can't. Even if that download takes them an hour, it still doesn't make sense to them. Okay. And for children that do the download at nighttime, they're going into sleep in anxiety. They're turning on their fight or flight as they go into sleep. And so they're at a disadvantage before they even get out of bed the next day.
Okay. So them even talking, because I'm actually thinking, I know a child, I can think of someone. So by them talking through that at night, say with their parent, it's not actually helping settle. They need tools. And I know you're going to discuss this in a little bit. Okay.
So but if they're able to talk with their parent, that's brilliant. It would be great if the parent could encourage it to happen earlier in the day.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then that there can be positive reinforcement afterwards.
Yes.
You know, but I know you did your best and you know how much you're loved. And well, we count now how many people love you. Let's see. There's mommy and there's daddy and there's your little brother and there's your auntie and there's your good friend. So you're going on to a positive. So they've done their download. They've gone back through it, but you're calming them down and you're bringing them to positives.
Yeah.
So that you're turning off their anxiety.
Okay. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the talker. Then the one that we're familiar with, the one that seems to be distressed and that cries more than their peers. And again, like even though 2024, we are moving forward, people tend to really... It's almost like you put a target on this child, that if there's going to be a child bullied, chances are it's going to be this child, because they're the one that's perceived as being weaker. They're the one that's perceived as not going to be able to stand up for themselves. Often they're told, you need to toughen up. And often they're told this by somebody who loves them because they want them to be safe. But
Yeah.
then they can go into, oh, they don't like who I am. Who I am isn't good enough. I need to pretend to be something else. They're disappointed with me. They'd like me to be like my friend or like my older brother. And so for this child, again, it's just finding a way of getting the right help for them. Often, of the list of things where they present, crying is probably the safest and the most appropriate of the tools for helping them to rebalance. And so if they're told you shouldn't be crying, it's like, oh, what do I do with this then? Where do I put my tears? Oh, I shouldn't cry. I don't have permission to cry. I have to put the tears away and I have to put on a pretend face.
Yeah, and then they have to hold it in for
Yeah. And this is their way of regulating, and they're told, no, you can't do that. So then how are they going to regulate? Like, what are they going to pick up to do instead? Next, I have the people pleaser. So
I
for a
think there'll
lot of
be a lot
sensitive
who will
children,
resonate with this.
so and some kids will be more than one.
Yeah.
So the people pleaser, we know the people pleaser. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And their attention is to everybody else. Their attention is on the people they care about, the people within their group. For different reasons, they're the big heart. They're the sensitive kid. They're the one that wants to save the world and everybody to be okay because they are that person. But also, they can sense their environment. So they can sense mum's not happy. But if I do all the cleaning and all the chores for her, maybe then she'll be happy. So they're trying to make somebody else happy as well as wanting to save the world. Often with the people pleaser, they as they grow, they kind of leave themselves and their own needs at the back, and they put everybody else's first. And then as you go out into the world, this isn't a great place to be for somebody. Like, we don't want children or teenagers going out into the world and going out learning to socialize without having the words no in their vocabulary. Like, it's just not safe. They have to know it's okay to say no. So for these kids to learn how to be an I, how to speak for themselves and how to address their own needs can be a challenge. So we're not trying to make them into little divas, but it's like, okay, Katie, it's your turn. Johnny did it the last time.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of encouraging the other child and telling whoever the little people pleaser is that that's okay. You can come and sit and read your book or whatever that is. That we're just encouraging equal chores and equal time and equal attention. And with the people pleaser, you know how kids, when they're two, do that terrible twos thing? And people go, oh my God, my toddler going through the terrible twos. But for me, the terrible twos is essential. It's when the child learns what they want, what they don't want, how to express it, what they absolutely will not give way on, and they're going to keep screaming until they get it, or what they will negotiate on, and they learn what society will accept from them.
Yeah.
So for some kids that are highly sensitive, they skip the twos and they just go, I don't mind, I don't mind. What do you want? I don't mind. What color lollipop do you want? I don't mind. And they don't speak as an I. And then they go out into the world and they get their friend group where they just go along with what their friends are doing. They're just happy to be included. So their thoughts and who they are as a person doesn't get its full potential.
Yeah, and they could fall through the cracks as well because they're the good kids. Do you know they're the kids who just say yes to mom,
Yeah.
yes to dad. So it might be harder
Yeah.
to see it until maybe they go into adulthood and the relationships they're attracting in or friendships and
And the relationships can be difficult because if they're used to being the people pleaser, the person that's most comfortable with that is somebody who is happy to let somebody run around for them and fetch and get and do all day. And that's not really somebody you want your child to partner with. And then if they do have healthy friendships, well, a healthy friend is going to find that uncomfortable if you're putting them first all the time. So that's the little people pleaser. The next one is the controller, the person that likes things to be in order, or they're often the bossy child. So if a child cannot make sense of the world, and they know once they go into a different setting, they have no clue how they're going to feel, what's going to be waiting behind the door, how they're going to cope with it, what their body is going to do, and how they're going to respond. So often children who are highly sensitive use control as their way of coping. So I can't cope with what's going on around the world, but I can put my books in order. I can't cope with how I'm going to feel today, but I know that my pencil is going to be at the top of my pencil case. I can't cope with what's going on in the world today, but I know all the cutlery in the drawer is in order. And when control is our only way of coping, it goes against us.
Yeah.
And if it's our only tool, it becomes like an OCD trait where I have to have this in place. And the harder the world is and the more exposed we are to it, and the bigger the groups we have to go into, or the more emotional the settings, then the more that child needs things in control and in order. And unfortunately, the world isn't. And then that child cannot cope, and they completely have a meltdown, or their behavior is completely uncontrollable. But their one way of coping isn't working. So that's our little controller. And then my last group, I call them, I talk about them being switched off. So this is how I would have survived my childhood or my schooling part of it. I would have switched off. So it was way too hard. I was getting hit constantly at school with a stick. And also, because I'm sensitive, the kids in the classroom would have been absolutely terrified 24/7. So I would have been feeling all of that pain, distress, anxiety, mine and theirs. I had no choice but to be in that room. So my way of coping was I shut down, I switched off. I was still there, but yeah, my heart was shut.
Okay.
I was functioning, but not there. And so I have very few memories from my childhood school because I wasn't there. I was physically there, but I wasn't there. And when I meet people from school and they're like, "Hi, Breathe, how are you?" I'm looking at these people thinking, I don't know who you are. I don't even remember them, let alone the events they're talking about, because I wasn't there.
Okay. And would that have been like way, like later into even your teenage years, or would it have been kind of younger?
So it was very much from the age of six.
Okay.
Because at six, that's when they started to beat us in class. Yeah. So in the age of my first two classrooms, they didn't often hit us, but from the age of six, there was spelling tests and, you know, for you to learn your spellings every night and all that kind of thing. So it would have been from the age of six for me. In secondary school, there would have been subjects where I was okay, but I would have been in the energy of all these hormonal teenagers where energy is changing from minute to minute in much bigger settings. And again, with no understanding of sensitivity or that you can actually be in your own energy and you can still stay open and be present, with no understanding of any of that, I would have still struggled for a lot of secondary. And because I did switching off as my default, I've often used it in my adult life, where if somebody said something critical or there was a setting I didn't like, I'm gone away. And it's very hard because, like, I'm now 56, Kira. I want every minute that's left. I want to actually live them.
I love that, yeah.
If I was to add up all the minutes in my life that I wasn't there for, I'm missing years, like years of my life that I have no memory of. I wasn't there. So I teach people how to be present with safe boundaries so that we're still processing, we're still feeling, but that we have a safe boundary cutoff point.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you shared this at your talk about what you do, or you give a really good example of, you know, when you switch off that you might be driving and you might forget where you've driven through somewhere and you can't remember, like that's, you may have switched off. Would that be a good example of that?
That's it, exactly. So, like, exactly that, that you could be driving. I could be driving to Galway and wonder, have I gone through Canberra? I'm like, oh, no, I'm only driving 10 minutes. I couldn't have got to Canberra yet. Oh, yeah, I probably have. I'm half an hour on the road. But I'm not processing where I am.
Yeah.
Or where I'm not present in conversation with people. I'm like, I have no clue what they're talking about. I just hear it. Or where time somehow goes from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and you're like, where did it go? So I just bring myself back in, two breaths, one into my lungs, safe to be here.
Yeah.
One into my feet, safe to be present. And I literally bring my awareness back into my body.
Yeah, yeah. And it's that safety piece, isn't it? And that grounding.
It's the word safe. Yeah, it absolutely is the word safe. So if somebody explained to me as a child about switching off, it wouldn't have made any difference. I would still have switched off. Like, there's no way I could have done it. So it's just trying to find ways then where we can help these kids to be grounded and where we can give them tools and language so that they can understand it.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you've gone through the different types of sensitivities and what that might look like for different children. But I know there'll be lots of people listening are like, okay, what can we do? Like, what are the tools? What will help our child feel safe and grounded?
So there's two different sets of tools. There's grounding tools and there's disconnecting tools. So the grounding tools is what helps them to feel solid. So a sensitive child will still feel the energy around them. But the more grounded they are, the less they will be impacted. So I talk to kids about SpongeBob. So if SpongeBob, who's this big sponge, goes into a big muddy puddle, he will soak up all the mud and he won't be able to play. So the sensitive child, if they go into the mud or into the emotional mud of the classroom, and soak it all up, if they soak up all their friends who are distressed or they had an argument with their brother that morning or granny's not well, and they soak up all of that energy, they're not going to be able to play. Whereas SpongeBob's friend Patrick, if he goes into a muddy puddle, he won't even notice. He might have a little bit of mud on his trainers, but he's not going to be soaking it. So I tell the kids they need to be more like Patrick and less like SpongeBob. They need to be more solid.
Yeah.
And then they can play more. So then it's working out. Different children, different things will help them to ground. So it's identifying what is their thing and encouraging it. So different children, different things. So for some of us like contact, strong contact. And I've met sensitive children that have taken this in a negative way. So I've seen them slap themselves where they're trying to bring themselves back in. They're literally trying to slap themselves back in.
Yeah, I've seen that. Their head button, and it's their way of trying.
They're trying to come back in.
Okay. Yeah.
They're trying to calm. They're trying to regulate. So, one little boy I met, he literally runs at the sitting room wall when he gets in from school. This is his coping skill. He'll run at the wall, bounce off it, turn, run at the other wall.
Okay.
And that's how he copes. So the kids that are physical contact, so for them it's like sports or activity where their feet are solid on the ground. So for them, activity, like if they're doing I get them to imagine that they're about to be rugby tackled, and to put that much pressure in their feet, it's going to hold them to the ground. Or I get them to take the base of their hand and just push down on their knees to push themselves in. Physical hill walking, running, the long jump. So these kids, physical. So if you're noticing your child is that child that's hitting or running at the wall or hitting their forehead or whatever that is, or you know where I've seen kids whack themselves with their teddies, or so if that's that child, it's a physical contact. It's the weighted blanket when they're sitting watching TV. It's the weighted blanket at nighttime. It's tucking them in really tight into the bed so that there's the physical contact that will calm them and bring them in.
Would a trampoline be good? Something?
No. Absolutely. So for them, they're on the trampoline, physically making that pressure. Skipping, jumping jacks, anything, running on the spot, jogging on the spot, anything where there's that physical pressure, running, bouncing, skipping, anything like that. Fast walking, hip hop, dance. So within that, the child that likes contact isn't going to like every one of those things, but you will find things within that group for that child.
Yeah.
Some kids, then, it'll be eye-to-hand coordination. So for them, it'll be things like table tennis, handball, swing ball, hurley, slipper, computer games. So we're not giving them computer games 24/7, and all of this is appropriate, but yeah. It's just anything that is eye-to-hand coordination. So there would be some kids that is their thing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be possible to do this all day, every day, but if they've played this at the weekend or they've done it the night before, like with kids that I have had live with me, we'd be doing jumping jacks waiting at the bus stop, or we'd be, you know, just running around the car just to get them to calm before they get on the bus. So other kids are eye to foot, so they'd be the football, the basketball, hoops, balance, you know, where you get them to pretend that there's a tightrope and they have to walk on the tightrope, that it could be a line of tiles across the kitchen. And you're not doing it, okay, you need to calm down, so you have to walk straight lines. It's like, oh, do you know what we could do? We could walk straight lines. So it's just trying to get them to do this. And when they're doing that, they're completely in their bodies. Like if they're playing table tennis, they're watching the ball. Their concentration is 100% there. It's not on how you're feeling, what's happening over there, what's happening in that room. It's completely, where's the ball? My turn, I need to whack it.
Yeah.
Some kids, it'll be water. So swimming, shower, bath, surfing, kayaking, canoeing, walking in the rain even, washing their hands in cold water. Anything with water that'll bring them in.
Yeah.
For some, nature, so the beach, the hills, the garden, but even the kitchen or sitting at the window will help to calm them. Then a lot of kids are logic. Logic will bring you in. So I always say numbers are my friends. So things like jigsaws, cards, crosswords, sudokus, chess, any puzzle. And then if the child is logic, this is a great one that you can use on the way to school. Let's see how many blue cars we see on the way to school. Let's count how many number plates with the 241 on them. Let's see if we see any number plates that are 181. And they're concentrating on the cars. They're not thinking, how do I feel? What's going to happen when I get to school? Yeah. They're just present and logical and in the moment. And so they get to the school gate calm.
Yeah.
Yes, they still have to go in the gate, but they're calm going in.
Yeah, and they're not getting stuck in the thoughts of, like what you said, what's going to happen when I go in there, what's the day going to be like? You know, they're focusing on something else.
Yeah, and they're calm in that. And so for those children that are logical, you can teach them, especially as they get older, that if numbers are their friend, if they're in the classroom and they're finding themselves really stressing, they can give themselves a little sum in their head. What's 2 and 3?
Okay.
They can multiply 2 by 3. They can do 12 13s in their head. So when they're finding themselves stressed in the classroom, they can give themselves a little puzzle.
Amazing. That's a good one. I actually wrote that down myself.
And I do jolly phonics with them as well. So, but I use the jolly phonics. So if your name is Kira, like that you spell out the name with the jolly phonic sounds, or you spell out the name with the jolly phonic actions and little rhymes. You know how each letter, that instead of learning alphabet now, they learn the jolly phonics. So it's like where each letter has a little rhyme and sound to go with it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So drum is duh, duh. I like drumming. So okay. Instead of spelling out D-A-V-I-D, they go duh, duh. And they do the sounds, you know. So we go, oh, there's a car. Let's spell car. There's a, will we spell my name? Will we do? So it's just a puzzle. And will we do your friend Katie's name? And we'll do out the jolly phonics for that. So it's just getting them to think logically. And when you're doing something like that, you're present and solid.
Yeah.
And then you have the kids that are creative. So if you're using a scissors, you're not thinking, I wonder how mommy's feeling. You are cutting out and making sure you've still have 10 fingers. So the creative stuff. And then as the kids get older and go into secondary school, a lot of kids that manage
were highly sensitive in primary. Once they get to secondary, they get into trouble because they put down their coping skills. It's like, I'm 12 now, I can't be playing with jigsaws, or I'm 12 now, I can't be doing. And so kids that have coped somehow just about in primary because they had their grounding skills get to secondary and then they're too cool for that. So it's to find, absolutely, as the sensitive person transitions from primary to secondary, to find grounding skills that are age appropriate because they need them more than ever.
Definitely. So that's a massive, massive transition, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. And then it's to find little ways and language of explaining to them. And I'll have said to little ones like 3, 4, and 5 year olds, how do you feel when you're at school? It's sad. And who owns that sad? Oh, it's the little girl that sits beside me. They'll actually know where the sad is coming from. Or angry, who owns the angry? Oh, it belongs to Sir. You know, so they'll know it's not theirs.
Yeah.
It belongs to, you know, they'll know it's an it and they'll know it's not theirs.
Yeah.
So then it's finding language and ways of explaining the it to them. So I tell them that they have superpowers and that their heart works differently to other people's. I tell them it's like, I have different examples in the book, the Mystery of the Sensitive Child, but I tell one of the examples is I get them to think of it like a radio.
Yes.
And that everybody's radio plays its own station. But children that have superpowers can pick up on other people's radio station. And sometimes the other person's radio station can be playing very loudly and can come in on top of theirs. And then they have two radio stations playing at the same time. So how to turn it off. So the radio station is one way, or I get them to talk about it like a t-shirt. If Manny was wearing a t-shirt today and it said how she was feeling, what would it say? Oh, it should say happy, it should say busy, it should say I have a lot of jobs to do, or whatever it says.
Yeah.
And then that then you could ask them, well, whose t-shirt are you wearing? Is that your t-shirt or is that Mammy's t-shirt?
Yes, yeah.
We're going to take off Mammy's t-shirt and you just wear your own t-shirt, and just giving them little vocabularies and little language and little ways of explaining it.
Yeah, and in their own way as well, because I've used both of those with kids. And
okay,
I've also
fabulous.
Used the jumper one with myself. And I'm like, that's not my jumper, you know. So it's really, I suppose it's bringing you back in, isn't it? And it's bringing the awareness, okay, I feel this, but it's not mine. But the jumper one for the kids is amazing. And they seem to work through things quicker than an adult might. Would you notice that?
But the kids, once they get it, they get
yes.
it.
Yeah.
Like for the adults, we've lived our life 20, 30, 40 years just rolling with all the t-shirts. But for the child, if you can get that at that age, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So can I ask, seeing as you've read that book, Kira, was there something in there for you that really jumped out, or was there something that you thought, oh?
Oh, when I read your book, I was just thinking of myself as a child, and I was like, oh my God, I wish I had this book. I wish I had all this information. And I suppose, like you, I really resonate with being a really sensitive child, but I only figured out, I suppose, in the last few years that actually I was picking up on lots of people's anxieties, their fears. I was very kind of fearful in the world. And when I look back, I'm like, I was just had everyone else's jumper on. So when I read it, I kind of felt like it was really healing for the little person within me to be like, oh. And now, like you, I'm so passionate about these children. I think they're our teachers. And I think if we can tell them when they're 3, 4, 5, even 10, even 15, even, you know, whatever age they get this information, but if they know, okay, I might feel things more deeply, but it's my gift, but it's about giving them the tools then.
Yes.
Do you know, and that's
yeah,
why,
exactly.
Yeah, and that's why bringing you on, or when I listened to you talk or I read your book, I was like, it's done in such a, you've written it in such a beautiful way, but there's a real simplicity in it as well, that you wouldn't pick it up and be like, oh, sensitive. You it's for everyone. And I want to recommend your book, because I know you've touched on a lot here. You've spoke about, you know, what sensitivity might look like, in children, and you've spoke about like tools that parents can use and information they can help for their child. But your book, like there's a two beautiful meditations in it. There's one for being present. I have used them with children and they're amazing. I love how in your book you use different examples. So I would really, really recommend getting this book for the sensitive child that you know, or for yourself. And I've also read, and I have it here right beside me, The Psychic Code. It's amazing. I think you've got a wealth of knowledge, Breed, and I think your books are written so gracefully, and they're just really amazing. And I will only ever share anything if I love it. And one of my friends was laughing because every time I met her, I kept on about the mystery of the sensitive child. She's like, "You're literally obsessed with that book." And when you were coming to Galway, I was like, "That lady, do you remember the book I'm obsessed with?" I was like, "That lady's coming to Galway." And she was actually supposed to come with me, but she couldn't. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Where can people find you? Where can they get your book? Where?
Okay, so I have a website called thepsychiccode.ie, the same as the book title. So there's links on there. In Galway's... in Kinney's, in Charlie Burns, in so there's a few of the shops, different places around Galway, but there's links, and it's also on Amazon, it's on Kindle, it's on iTunes, and it's becoming more and more popular in more and more of the shops. And this weekend I'm in Limerick for the Mind Body event, so I'll be doing a little stand down there, and I'll be doing a free talk there as well.
Oh, amazing. Are you doing the same talk that you did?
I am. I'm going to do the sensitive child, yes.
Okay, amazing. Okay, I must share that on my Instagram. So thank you so much. And I've no doubt you've an important message.
I'm very grateful. Very grateful, Ciara, to have the opportunity to come on and chat with you and talk about a topic that really means so much to both of us.
Yeah. And it is so important. I think I said this to you, the Whitney Houston song, "I believe the children are our teachers, teach them well and let them lead the way, show them all the beauty they possess inside."